Okay.
Yeah, I was just.
Okay. Hi, welcome everyone to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. And today is April 17th, 2015, Friday afternoon. We have a number of bills that we will probably be holding over because we don't have the full fiscals for them yet, although they may come in. But Robin, can you please tell us what those are?
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2201, House Bill 2195, House Bill 2233, House Bill 2547, House Bill 2756, and House Bill 3391.
One more.
No, on
the other side.
Did you miss this one? House Bill 3524?
Yep.
Yeah, we had planned to take... Oh, that's totally fine. Yep, good. Sounds good.
So those are the ones that we may carry over unless fiscals come in between now and then. So the plan is we are going to start with one work session on a bill that Representative Nancy Nathanson is here for, because that will probably be fast, and then we'll let her go on. Mm-hmm. Then we will do the two public hearings. Since we have people signed up to testify, those are the first time we're hearing those bills. That might take a little longer, and then we will go back and work all the bills that we can.
So, Madam Chair, just to be clear, House Bill 3524, we will, it is the Chair's intention, correct me if I'm wrong, to hold the public hearing just
right
now, but to hold over the possible work session. So just to be very clear about that.
Great. Okay, so I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2233. And Representative Nathanson, can you please explain to us the -2 amendment, I believe it is. And can actually, Robin, could you please summarize the bill?
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2233 directs Oregon Health Authority to continue payments for behavioral rehabilitation services during child welfare investigation, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a -3 amendment pending that replaces the bill, directs Department of Human Services to create an advisory committee for the purposes of advising DHS on matters relating to residential child care. Residential care for children as prescribed, outlines advisory committee membership, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means required for this bill.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13. I want to begin with apologies to Representative Stark for my lack of melody today.
We thought you could dance if you didn't want to sing.
Thank you to the committee administrator, who has already explained to you that there's a -3 amendment which will entirely replace the language. What we're doing is, after I had an opportunity to talk with both the providers and the department and try to work out concerns from the different sides, we have come up with language that appears to be amenable to those involved. What it does is it replaces the language that was there with instruction to have a departmental advisory committee to provide a venue for the youth behavioral service providers and the agency to work on issues that arise in administering these residential programs for children. We think that it will be very valuable for the department, and because of the youth who are involved, also to include, for example, the Oregon Youth Authority in these conversations, because they're involved in residential services as well. So if DHS, Oregon Youth Authority, and the providers are at the table discussing these things, it seems that whatever conclusions they come up with or recommendations could be ready for us in the next session. But I think it will be invaluable at this point to basically require this advisory group to convene and start to work on this issue.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for all the work in between. Any questions for Representative Nathanson? Okay. If not, may I have a motion on the...
Nope.
Oh, this is one of the ones that
don't have the paperwork.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We will work it later in the day if the paperwork comes in.
Can we go ahead and adopt the -3s?
You said you'd like to do it all on the same day, right?
Okay. Sorry.
It's the whatever the pleasure of the chair is. I'm happy to do whatever.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay. Okay, we are going to move on to some public hearings, but I do want to make a comment on one of the bills that is here that we don't intend to work. Let me see what the number was. 3537, which established guidelines and standards for placement of youth offenders in isolation and youth correction facilities and training camps. That was the OYA bill. We are not going to work that bill. But we there's a task force that is already assigned and is looking to the isolation practices. And their first meeting is coming up on the 30th of this month. It involves a number of different people already assigned to it: senior manager of custody services in Multnomah County, Disability Rights Oregon, Multnomah Circuit Court, the OIA African American Advisory Committee, Partnership for Safety and Justice, Lane County Public Defender, Multnomah County Chief Deputy DA, Youth Rights and Justice, the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, and Trillium Family Services have representatives on this. This has been a really important issue. I appreciate Representative Lou Frederick and the Center for Intercultural Organizing bringing this to our attention. I appreciate the great work that OIA and the employees have been doing on this issue. It's a really critical issue. This committee has expressed, I know I've talked to several of you, both of my vice chairs in particular, has expressed the desire to have OIA and the task force come back and talk to us probably in December. We'll give them a chance to work on a lot of the issues and then come back and make some presentations to us. That gives us enough time if we do need a bill for the 2016 session, then we can consider it at that time. Are there any questions on that? Very important population, very important issue. Appreciate that it was brought to us. Okay. All right, I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3524. And Representative Reardon, Robin, can you please summarize the bill?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3524 directs state agencies to notify nonprofit organizations, tribes, and tribal entities of lands available for purchase for the purposes of affordable housing development. There is a dash two amendment pending, which modifies language for clarity, removes erroneous reference, and removes erroneous reference to the Department of Transportation.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Oh. Good afternoon.
We have half the team up there and half the team over here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Just for the record, Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48. Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. I did testify before, some time ago, seems like a long time ago, and this is a continuation of the work that Representative Parrish and I did over the last 6 months, year, something like that, on housing. And the gist of it is that we're trying to find land on which to build affordable housing, and that's our issue. So we've identified there's potential that ODOT might have land, Department of DAS might have land, DSL. Anyway, it's been a lot of work and had many conversations with the agencies, and so we've been refining this concept. So let me go ahead and just read this. I'll go quicker. So this bill dealt with disposition of lands in ODOT's and DSL control. It did pose a few constitutional issues along with feasibility issues, so we have returned with this new draft. In coming up with this new proposal, I worked with housing advocates, agency representatives, and council to find a workable solution. This measure builds upon existing law, which prescribes a process for agencies to use when disposing of land they no longer need. Under this bill, agencies who hold property that is in a proper spot for location, i.e. inside an urban growth boundary, urban reserve, or an unincorporated rural community, and is land for which the agency has no plans for use in the next 5 years, then that land must be listed for sale under their normal process. The property doesn't have to actually sell under this measure, but the agency does need to make the effort to list it for sale and alert the relevant stakeholders. They've had a process similar to this. We just want to make sure that housing advocates and agencies can have the information they need so they can get in on the opportunity to purchase. So this measure then changes the order in which stakeholders receive notice of a property. Under current law, political subdivisions, local governments, get first bite at the apple. Under this measure, local governments and housing nonprofits receive notification at the same time. So minor change, it just brings the nonprofits up to an equal position in terms of when they receive notice. We also need to be adding tribal governments to that list, and so really I beg your indulgence, but there is actually another amendment coming, dash four. So it's that time of year. However, ODOT and DSL are exempted or will be by amendment from Section 3 of the bill because there are constitutional limitations on how each agency disposes of property. Nonetheless, we think it's a good step forward in addressing the availability of buildable land in urban areas. If you have any hard questions, Janet Bird from the Housing Association is here with me to take those. Easy questions, I'll take.
Any questions for Representative Reardon? We're going to throw the hard ones to Representative Parrish, too.
Thanks.
Yeah, Representative Page.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Could you explain the, I think I heard you mention another amendment coming that would include tribal. Could you expand
in terms
on
of
that?
This would, thank you, Representative Hayden and Chair. This would be people who would receive the notice. So along with the nonprofits, then the tribes would as well.
So follow up for them to purchase that property.
They'd have the opportunity. They'd be notified that the property is available for purchase.
And we could continue to restrict that property for that purpose, even though it was, in my understanding, that would go to a sovereign nation?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have Paul Mather and Janet Bird come up. Is Paul here?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hayden, the section of the bill that would be amended.
Janet
Bird, I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships. I worked with Representatives Reardon and Parrish on the Affordability Balance and Choice Work Group. So if I may address the question, Madam Chair, the Dash 4 amendment, which is forthcoming, and we apologize for the tardiness of it, will exempt Department of State lands as the Dash 2s, which are on OLIS, exempt ODOT. And I'll talk about that in a minute if folks have questions. And then we would insert, if you look at the bill, line 15, where it says nonprofit organizations that will develop housing on the real property that will be occupied by families and individuals, we would be inserting after nonprofit organizations, tribes and tribal entities. And so that would capture the tribal housing authorities and the nonprofit organizations that have been set up by tribes to do affordable housing development. It wouldn't be intended to transfer land to tribes for other purposes than affordable housing development.
So, I mean, I think an example in our area is NEA, serves the tribal community, and they already build affordable housing in my district, and
So the question was, I understand that intent. We don't have the dash four here, so we haven't been able to read it. But the question was, can the state of Oregon in statute restrict that once the ownership changes hands?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I am not an attorney. I can pose that question. We could ask legislative counsel as well. But it is my reading that the organizations would need to declare an intent to develop that housing as affordable for these income limits, and that would be part of the agreement when the land was transferred.
So I'm going to let Representative Parrish take a crack at this, too. But I also want to inject some reality here. If we don't have the amendment now, we're not going to be able to do it because we've been told no fiscals on Monday for bills that are passing on Monday. And here it is Friday afternoon without the amendment. So the reality is this will have to be done on the Senate side, which means we will be voting on it with the dash two on Monday when we carry it over and have the fiscal for that. We're still waiting for that. That can be dealt with on the Senate side. So I think the questions that are being raised are good because then you can answer them on the Senate side. And that means if we pass it in the House, pass it on to the Senate, you would have to vote to concur if they make any change so you can track that issue.
Okay.
So I think that my swag at answering Representative Hayden's question would be that how I interpret this is that if the first right of refusal is specifically for the purpose of affordable housing, and now effectively that's non-native land, that an intergovernmental agreement between a sovereign nation and the state of Oregon, we do that like where we had let OSP, for example, go into a casino and have their books be open in exchange for, we do that, right? Okay. There's precedent to do that. That an intergovernmental agreement between between the sovereign tribe, its non-tribal land, it's for this purpose, would allow them to build that housing effectively if they said, hey, we want to spend the money and build the housing. But I also think, and maybe Janet can correct me if I'm wrong, is that housing opportunity could not be just simply restricted to people of Native origin. Once it's affordable housing, you have to put it out there in the community, and anybody who meets the criteria would have access to that housing. Am I wrong on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, that's correct. All housing would come under the Federal Fair Housing Act.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Oh, well, you had signed up to testify, so why don't you continue, Janet?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I know you have a long list of things to do, so I'll be brief. As Representative Reardon has explained, the intent of this bill was to identify land where possible, particularly well-located land within urban growth boundaries, urbanized areas, small rural communities that would be appropriate for affordable housing development. One of the questions that you've heard a lot about is how do we make sure that we have affordable housing in opportunity areas? So that was the intent. We have discovered in the course of legislative discussions that both ODOT and Department of State Lands have significant constitutional and statutory restrictions on the disposition of their land. And so that's the reason that they need to be exempted from the mandatory, you will look at your inventory and find things to sell. And but they would still be subject to the first part of the bill, which sets up the notification when they do choose to dispose of land through existing Department of Administrative Services processes. Nonprofit organizations that do housing development, tribal entities that want to do housing development would be notified and would have priority along with local governments to claim that land and purchase it. The expectation is not that any land gets transferred without without compensation.
One quick question. Janet, maybe you can answer. Do we hear from anybody else besides like ODOT and others who have some? I'm thinking of a piece of property in Lake Oswego that became a school that was an armory. So we have some of those opportunities, and those are fairly decent sized pieces of land. The ones that in suburbia tend to be meet the criteria for this. We didn't hear from anybody like the military department say they could, you know, armories.
No, Chair Kenny-Geyer, Representative Parrish, the only communications were from DAS, which spent a fair amount of time explaining to us the current process and how we wanted to insert into that priority, and ODOT and Department of State Lands.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more question.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you. Chair Kenny-Geyer, one more question. Sorry, they're difficult questions, or complicated. I don't see anything in the bill, but again, we don't have the dash four amendment, which apparently won't get here on time, that would restrict these municipalities, government agencies, from acquiring the land through eminent domain. Is there anything in there that would restrict that process of acquiring private property to be put into this arena to then to be resold for that purpose?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, My limited knowledge of those statutes is that that's set out separately. What we've amended are the parts of statute that deal with the disposition of state property. So I don't think that we've...
Once they own that state property, right? This question is, how is there any restriction on how they acquire that state property?
This bill would not address that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Representative Bueller, do you want to ask your question now? We have one more testifier, too, from ODOT.
Okay. Let me ask a question. Okay. So, say if it's a very large piece of property, is the whole piece of property have to be offered, or could it be a portion of that property that could be offered or accepted, I guess?
Chair.
I'm assuming. So the main objective is just to give people the opportunity to know that the property is for sale, and then whatever negotiations goes on after that would be between the seller and the buyer.
But to follow up?
Yep.
So, and this is a little bit of hypothetical. So say it's a large, very valuable piece of property that an affordable housing organization really had no intention of building on, but they just acquired it to flip it, basically, because there's so much private interest. How do you assure that that's not going to happen?
Madam Chair and Representative Bueller, the way the bill is drafted, it gives notice at the same time to nonprofit affordable housing directors and the local jurisdictions. Presumably, the local jurisdictions would have some sort of a planning process or expectation about development, given the systems that we have in place that ask local jurisdictions to do that. So I think that there would be multiple eyes on any sizable transaction. I think, as you're aware, there aren't in most communities really significant pieces of land that would transfer without people noticing.
So, follow up, please. So, who sets the price in this situation then?
So, Chair County Guyer, Representative Bueller, within the DAS process, which is what much of this would go through, there is there's language in statute that talks about appraised value for anything worth over $100,000. My presumption is that there would also be for properties that didn't go through the DAS process that same sort of an appraisal that would be required.
Okay, one more follow-up. And if someone wanted to pay above appraisal value, how would that be dealt with if there's a first refusal allocated towards the affordable housing developers?
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Bueller, that's typically something that would be looked at when the transaction was reviewed by either a local jurisdiction, a financial institution, the state housing agency. Appraisals are typically reviewed pretty closely to be sure that if there's public investment, particularly being made into a development, that public investment is being wisely spent.
Okay. If no more questions for now, would you like to go?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. Just offer a few comments. You remember I was here last time talking about some concerns we had with the previous bill. This bill with the DAS 2 amendment changes our process for selling property, as we've been talking about. It gives housing authorities the opportunity to purchase properties before it goes on the general market. We believe this change will be a significant change in offering the property that we do deem surplus as an opportunity to making public properties available for housing while staying within the constitutional limitations we have for the State Highway Fund.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we don't have the paperwork for this one now. We will work it on Monday. There, my intention would be to move it to the floor with the caveats that you would say on the floor. There is a possibility, if any of the people that are involved in this bill want to move it to rules, to have more of an opportunity to really work it on the side before, please let me know. Otherwise, I wouldn't.
I think we just move it right along. And
yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on, which bill is this one? House Bill 3524, and open a public hearing on 2201. Representative Greenlich's bill. Could you please read, Robin, the summary?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2201 establishes task force on gambling, outlines membership and responsibilities, requires report to Legislative Assembly on or before March 1st, 2016, sunsets task force at the beginning of the 2017 legislative session, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that replaces the bill that establishes gaming council, outlines membership, directs Oregon Health Authority to staff council, outlines duties of council, directs council to provide a report on the costs and benefits of gaming activities in Oregon by March 1st, 2016, and subsequently every 4 years, declares emergency effective on passage.
Okay, Tim Murphy. Is there anyone else that's here to testify on this bill?
Madam Chair, my apologies. If I might add, there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Murphy. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Bridgeway Recovery Services here in Salem, which is a mental health and addictions treatment program. I've appeared before this committee before in speaking out in support of folks that struggle with gambling. And I'm here today to ask for your support for establishing this commission to study, and a nonpartisan commission to study gambling in the state of Oregon. The roots of this bill go way back to over 20 years. Attorney General Ted Kulongowski wrote a report in the first Kitzhoffer administration making a suggestion for a commission to be set up to help study the development of gaming services in the state. It never got done, and as a result, we've seen the gambling services expand over the last 20 years without really a cogent place in the state for conversation. So this idea of this commission is to gather information, synthesize data, report it back to the executive branch, the legislative branch, and to the public to inform everyone of information regarding the expansion, the system of public gambling that occurs here in Oregon.
Any questions? Representative Taylor, do you have any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Great. Appreciate it.
That was. Thank you so much. The fiscal just came in for this bill, $153,000, correct?
Mm-hmm.
For the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we could, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2201. We could open a work hearing on this because we now have the paperwork. We haven't done that before in this committee. We usually give a space between first hearing a bill and then doing a work session. On the other hand, we do have a lot piling up from the last day. So I'm just trying to get a general sense of whether people are ready to work this bill. Yes, Representative Parrish.
Who would be able to talk about the budget piece? I get that, you know, it's going to take some staff to get this
done. Tim is walking out the door.
But I mean, what's reimbursement? I'd like to know what that is.
We actually have another question. Yeah. Are you able to answer a question about the fiscal?
Pardon me?
Are you able to answer questions about the fiscal? It just came in, $153,000. So you may not have even
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not actually the author of the bill. Lane County, a committee on problem gambling, authored the bill, so I don't think I can answer that question. I know there was some discussion about funding coming from a fund of uncollected gambling winnings that averages around $4 million per year. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to use 10 or 15% of those funds to help support the administrative costs of setting up a commission. But I just know that by hearsay. Does that not answer your question?
It's not.
Appropriately?
Not mine. I can hold it over.
Did you open the work session?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
I can get the information and get it to you.
Yeah. I'm confused about whether I had closed the public hearing or opened a work hearing or whatever. So I'm going to open the public hearing just to make sure that you're officially on the record here.
Okay.
On 2201. And Ty, could you please make sure to include Tim Murphy's comments? Questions?
A comment. If you take a second and look at the fiscal impact statement, when you get down to the OHA, Oregon Health Authority, I mean, it does outline what the money is being, how it is being distributed. I think that's helpful.
0.63 FTE per biennium.
Well, it ultimately covers every line item.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, it says, you know,
right,
for travel and other expenses, the $42,000 of biennium, I'd like to just know, where are we having people travel from? Is it for meetings? I mean, I'd like to get a little more granular with that just to understand that this number seems high for a work group.
Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, I believe the intent of that was that this commission would represent all of Oregon, and when people are called to a meeting, it would cover their travel, their expenses, whether they're coming from Klamath Falls or coming from Joseph to participate in committee meetings, and administrative costs around the gathering, the synthesizing of the data was the only cost that people were discussing in the brief discussion I had.
Okay,
we can get more information.
My intention is to carry this over to Monday. Since I don't usually put something through unless it seems really obvious, I will give it the weekend to have any other questions answered. And I think Justin Freeman and Senator Greenlick's Representative Greenlick's office could be a good person to answer some of these questions as well. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2201. And open a work session on 2360. Can we please have a summary of the bill? We're going fast, I know. Sorry. 2360.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2360, you may recall, we heard just earlier this week on the 13th, it directs the Department of Human Services to notify school districts, Teachers Standards and Practices Commission, and the Department of Education in cases of alleged child abuse in schools, directs DHS to coordinate with law enforcement on investigation, directs DHS to report outcomes of investigations to said entities. There is no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact has been issued.
No amendment?
There is no amendment.
Okay.
The fiscal is on OLS, and this is the number.
The fiscal is on OLS?
Mm-hmm.
$74,000?
Mm-hmm.
Which usually, so there's no no subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
At this point, no, but if right, we could pause, I can get some clarity on that.
Okay. Okay, I think that's true. Okay, well, stand at ease for a moment.
Thank you.
It is the recommendation of LFO to send it to Ways and Means. So we are trying to figure out.
It'll just take me 1 second.
Okay, to get the language.
I got it.
But other than that, are there any questions on this bill?
So, make a comment.
Yes, please.
I think I'm glad we're doing this bill. I think it's ridiculous that we have to do a bill like this to get, I can't believe it's taken so long for this to happen and that we missed this sort of thing. This is just not okay. So there's my sentiments.
Motion on the bill.
Okay. Are you ready for that motion?
So you just have to change the language a little bit.
Madam Chair, Representative or Vice Chair Stark, it's necessary for us to add.
I'm assuming we're basically going to say that.
It's not by prior reference, so it's just and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So it's this right here. So, but it's this number.
Who knew that motions had to be so specific, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Chair Kinnegar, I move House Bill 2360 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 2360 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and... pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Rev. Mueller?
Yes.
Rev.
Yes.
Rev. Gallegos?
Yes.
Rev. Hayden?
Aye.
Rev. Harris?
Aye.
Rev. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Calusa?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnegar?
Aye.
We
don't need a carrier
because it's going to be. Okay. All right, good. Close the work session on 2360 and open a work session on 2413. Robin, can you summarize the bill, please?
Yep.
Getting punchy up here.
No.
I just got a
telephone bill.
2413.
13. You can do it.
Just carry it over from the Monday agenda.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2413. That we heard for the first time just this past Wednesday, directs the Department of Human Services to report necessary changes to the Legislative Assembly to implement outlined goals relating to reducing need for long-term care facility bed capacity, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a -1 amendment that replaces the bill that prohibits the Department of Human Services from granting licenses to residential care facilities as defined unless they provide a market study on the need for services in the relevant geographic area. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact. And the statements have been issued.
Okay. As you may recall, this came up with the sisters situation where there was a discrepancy in how it was interpreted. It's kind of a technicality clarification of the law. Are there any questions?
Are there the amendments?
Are there any amendments?
Yeah, the amendments should be in the list.
-1.
-1 amendment.
Okay.
Let me just double check.
So why don't you remove the amendment? All right, can I have a motion on the amendment, please?
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3/26/2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3/26/2015. Is there any discussion?
I do have a question.
Yep.
So if the licensing agency, if I'm looking at the line 20 on page 2, licensing agency may not issue an initial license to a residential care facility if they've not conducted the market study and they've not found a need. So does that mean that if they do conduct a market study and the licensing agency says, hey, well, we don't think there's a need, that a license can't be issued?
Manager, I need Phil Bentley. Is Phil Bentley here? Would you like to come up to clarify? Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Parrish, Phil Bentley with the Oregon Healthcare Association. My understanding of the intent of the amendment, I don't have it in front of me, is that the market study would still be required to be conducted and provide, and as long as it is conducted, the license could be issued. The issue in the past is that the market study was being used as a determination for whether or not a license could be granted, and the intent is simply to have a market study conducted, but not the basis for whether or not a license is granted.
Can I follow up?
So, is it the person who wants to build the home, or is the onus to do the market study on them, or on the facility? Oh, so it's on them. So, So this says then, I'm trying to just wrap my head around it, this says then that if they don't conduct the study, there is no initial license, but it doesn't say that what the results of the study, whether that precludes licensure or not. So can the licensing agency say, so if you're trying to look at building a facility in, you know, the furthest corner of Oregon, and you do this market study, and then it's come to find out that demographically or whatever, there's the market study says, well, we don't see a need, can the licensing agency say, well, you can't build that then because there's no need? Does this say that somebody who wants to make that investment and build can't because the results of the market study say there's no need?
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Parrish. I think the answer would be, and Mike McCormick is here from DHS, but my understanding is that the agency could not deny a license simply because of a finding from the market study. The intent of the market study is for someone who is interested in siting a residential care facility to know what the market is so that their eyes are wide open and they understand what the market conditions are. And it's a factor that the agency can look at in making the determination for issuing a license, but it, as a standalone basis, should not be a bar to the issuing of a license. There are other factors in that portion of the statute.
Mike McCormick, could you please come up and join us?
Good afternoon. For the record, Mike McCormick, Director for the Aging and People with Disabilities Program within the Department of Human Services.
Thank you. Same question. So I guess if the market study, maybe the better way to phrase this, if the market study does not preclude licensure, then why request a market study and have somebody incur the cost to do such a study if it's not going to be what precludes somebody from getting a license? I read this, and my concern is that if you're not going to get the license if you don't do the market study. But it doesn't say what the results of that market study are, whether or not it can get a license or not. So if the market says it won't bear adding, you know, a facility, but somebody still wants to build a facility, are they going to be told no?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I'm sorry, I'm freezing up today. My understanding is that this is an eyes wide open requirement. A potential business has to understand the needs of the market. However, we will not be using that as a basis for determining whether or not to issue a license.
Follow up. So if I'm going to go franchise a McDonald's, for example, and I decide I'm going to go into Burns, Oregon, it's on me as a business owner to do the due diligence without the government saying, could the market bear more French fries being sold here? So I hate to be so trivial in an example, but I sort of liken it to that same thing. We're asking a private business to effectively do a market study that you are not going to determine licensure or not, and then say, well, we're just going to put you through the exercise. If a private owned business, a company wants to come in and site something and build something and the land use says that they can, I'm just sort of unsure why we're putting a layer of bureaucracy on them to actually do the work.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Parrish, I really believe it's a due diligence requirement to ensure that before a business invests this type of money, that they've done their due diligence, they understand what exists in the market, and whether this is going to be a viable business.
Follow up. So if I build my McDonald's in Burns, Oregon, and nobody comes to buy my French fries, that loss, the business loss of that, is on me. Again, why are we in the business in this amendment, why would we be in the business of asking or requiring that we are going to get in the business as a state of helping a business do their due diligence? Is there a situation where if I build a facility like this and nobody comes to fill it, that there is any kind of recourse on the state for having allowed me to build it? I'd be curious if there's something in the statute that says somebody could come back and sue the state of Oregon for their failed business.
Maybe I can try to add to that, because I think there's a little bit of context, Chair Kenegaard, Representative Parrish, in terms of why we're basically trying to modify existing statutes. So the market study has been a requirement since 2008, along with three other factors. And it's my understanding that that was included in statute when we were coming out of a moratorium period on the construction of new residential care facilities. And so the slight difference here between your example of a McDonald's and a residential care facility is that the state has to issue a license in order for that facility to go forward, and there are a number of factors that are involved in that. I agree with the kind of the thrust of your question, which is that is ultimately a decision that the business owner should make about whether or not they want to enter into that market. But we felt like it would be prudent to require at least a market study so that multiple folks who might be entering into a market would know that other folks are looking at building in that area. And we've had a situation like that in Central Oregon. And unfortunately, we think the law has been misinterpreted to basically serve as a bar, basically saying, well, there's already another application in, so you can't go forward with your facility. And we would like to see this just be considered as a factor that so that the people who are interested in building a facility know that there are other folks who are looking at that market, but ultimately they make the decision whether they want to take the financial risk to enter that market. And so that's kind of what we're actually trying to clarify in the law, is that it's a factor, not a bar, but we're leaving it in the law again so other businesses know what that market entails.
Last little follow-up, though, is that we wouldn't do that for Burgerville, right? So Burgerville wants to go to Burns, too. Maybe McDonald's is going to site there. Like, we don't do that anywhere else in the marketplace that I know of. So I'm just going to be a no on this. Sorry.
Thank you,
Chair. On that one.
I kind of would like to repeat back what I think you just said in my understanding before we vote on this. So to my understanding, current law requires this market study be done. So although I agree with Rep. Parrish that I don't see the logic in requiring it. However, under current law, it is required, and under current law, it can sometimes be used as a determining factor on whether or not someone receives their license. And this, to my understanding from what you've been saying, this clarifies that it cannot be used as a determining factor.
Chair Kenegaard, Representative Stark, I think that is correct. It is current law. And the intent of the bill, and it may be a challenge with the way the amendment is drafted, is to make sure that it is not construed as like a certificate of need, being basically saying either you can or you can't. It's a factor that in the sense that it has to be supplied, but it cannot be a standalone determining basis for denying a license.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Evans, and then I'll come back to you.
I just want to make sure I understand. Most of these facilities, so it's like three questions, mm-hmm. and it can be yes, no, or it can be maybe. But most of these facilities at some point have some type of subsidy, right? Whether it's Medicare, I mean, however it comes in, there's folks that are in these residential long-term facilities do have some money from public sources at some point going in. Yes or no?
Chair Kenegaard, Representative Evans, some facilities serve Medicare or Medicaid okay. patients, so the subsidy in the sense is not direct to the provider, but right. it is through the services they provide.
So what I'm trying to drive at is, I understand the discussion about private enterprise, but in this particular case where there are public funds as a part of, well, in these cases where Medicare, which is public funds, or other types of subsidies may be involved, I understand the need for regulation. Just wanted to get that on the record. I don't see it the same as Burgerville or Burger King.
Was that your three questions? It's my turn again. Thank you. I have at least two in my community that don't receive public funds.
There's not 1 cent of public dollar in there?
I stood up and voted against the provider tax last year because I have a facility that does not get public funds.
Okay.
So, and they were going to get wrapped into the provider tax, and I stood alone and said no on the provider tax, and they don't, for that level of care, they do not, Mary's Woods. So there are facilities that don't take public funds that do this type of care, that do skilled living and things like that, where people have set aside money for them. So I have a problem saying that we're not going to cite. The dash 7 says the licensing agency may not issue a license without this. So to me, that is very similar, and we're trying to control the marketplace in this amendment. So I'm just going to be a no, because there are those types of facilities, and I don't think they should be precluded by having to do this kind of work.
Okay. So I want to remind us this is a technical fix to clarify interpretation of an existing law. You may not love the existing law. Is there anything else you'd like to just say to clarify? Otherwise, I want to take a pause on this.
No, I don't think I have anything to add. Thank you.
Okay. No. I'm going to stand at ease. Okay, call us back to order and reopen the work session on 2413, and we will go ahead.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move to adopt the dash 1 amendment dated 3/26/15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash 1 amendment dated 3/26/15. Is there any I think we had done that part, hadn't we? We're having discussion. Familiar. Okay. Is there any further discussion on that one? Is there any objection on the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, can you please call the roll? This is on the dash 1 amendment.
Rev Mueller.
Yes.
Rev Evans.
Yes.
Rev Bayo.
Yes.
Rev Hayden.
No.
Rev Harris.
No.
Rev Taylor.
Aye.
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso.
Aye.
Chair Kenny-Geyer.
Aye. The motion is adopted.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move House Bill 2413 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2413 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'll make a small statement.
Please go ahead.
Just reiterating, I'm not a fan of the current law, but I think this bill would make the current law less bad.
Okay.
So.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, clerk, please call the roll.
Rev Euler?
Yes.
Rev Evans?
Yes.
Rev Gallegos?
Yes.
Rev Hayden?
No.
Rev Harris?
No.
Rev Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chairman
Guy? Aye. The motion passes. Representative Gallegos, will you carry the bill?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. I'm going to close a work session on 2413, open a work session on 3148. Robin, can we please have a summary of the bill?
Certainly. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3148, as you may recall, we heard on April the 6th that creates a wildfire damage housing relief account within the Oregon Housing Fund. It directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to administer grants to households at or below 75% of the federal poverty level for loss of house due to wildfire. Directs continuous appropriation for funding of wildfire damage housing relief account. There is no revenue impact. It has been issued a fiscal light statement because it's going down to Ways and Means.
Was there an amendment?
There is no amendment.
Okay, so my understanding on this bill is that they haven't quite figured out the mechanisms yet for paying, and so they're not quite sure. When Representative McLean presented this, he thought it would be somewhere around $200,000. Until we really know what the mechanism is, and is it per person, is it a fund setup, we won't really know. But my intention is to work the bill to give them more time to figure that out in Ways and Means. Are there any, well, we'll hold the discussion until we have the motion, I guess. Representative Stark, could you?
Yes, make sure I have the right one in front of me. Okay.
3148.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, I move House Bill 3148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Stark moves House Bill 3148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Evans.
three questions.
Okay.
First question is, Vice Chair Stark and Chair Kinnegar, you're on the committee Ways and Means that this will go to or not? The sub?
I don't know.
I'm not exactly sure which one it would be referred to.
Okay. Well, if you are, the two questions I would have that I'd like to know before it comes to the floor.
Okay.
Is number one, how this fits into the Lloyd's of London strategy that we are currently doing that year by year we hope we get, which this year was rougher than last, and with the potential drought will make next year even more. And the second piece is that when it's explained on the floor that this approach is also put in context of the other funds that are currently associated with wildfire or at least fire relief in public areas. There's three or four different funds. There's rural interface areas where some housing is protected and some places where it's not. And I just want to make sure we're not creating more of a problem in terms of cobbling together things. So I hope that that discussion is
takes place. Any other comments, questions? Those are excellent points. Thank you. Okay, Representative Stark.
Didn't I already make a motion?
Did you already make the? Oh, they were on the discussion. All right. Seeing none. Any other discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Rep. Euler?
Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallego?
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Parrish?
Yes.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Palooza? Aye. Aye. The motion passes. I'm closing the work session on 3148. Open the work session on 3318. Please have a summary.
Certainly. Oh, dear.
This is the gaming
just, yeah. Madam Chair, I need just one.
3318.
My apologies.
She's going to summarize it. I just wanted to do something.
Nope.
Just waking
you up. No, I'm not. I'm awake. Let me tell you. I'm looking at all the stuff we got here.
It's a lot today, isn't it?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Madam Chair, I need to pause for just a second.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right. And this is one that was carried over from 415 because we didn't have the paperwork yet.
Did we already discuss the amendments on this?
Aye. You can, Madam Chair, you can go ahead and clearly it's your decision, but if you'd like to discuss the amendment, I can find the correct version of the
Representative Taylor, could you give us an informal summary of the bill? And
with the bill, it's really not that complicated. This is something we've been working on for a long time with the Oregon Lottery Commission. Last fall in November, the Oregon Lottery Commission developed almost a year ago, about 9-10 months ago. They, after a lot of work in a work group, they came up with what's called the Oregon State Lottery Responsible Gambling Code. And then they adopted it, the commission adopted it last November. And what this does is it puts it in statute. There was simply a clerical error, I guess you would say, and it says gaming
instead of gambling.
And in the world of people who try to help folks with gambling, there's two different worlds. There's a gaming problem, which is like internet gaming, which is a type of addiction, but some look at it as type of addiction, and then there's gambling, which is a different thing. And so that's why the amendment had to be put in. It was to make this about gambling, which is what the Oregon Lottery does.
Okay.
And so this is something that Jack Roberts and Lisa DiZono, who's the chair of the commission, are both supportive of. He came and testified about that. And at one point, this was a big issue about 3 years ago. I think Representative Parrish probably could also speak about this. But we've come a long way. And so now this is about making certain that when we offer lottery practices in the state, that we're doing it in the most responsible way possible. So that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. But can we, is there a dash one?
We do have a dash one.
We have the dash one. And so, Chair Peluso.
It's the changing.
It's the 3318.
It's the dash three.
You got it? Okay.
Dash three.
Dash three.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-17-2015.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-17-15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, if not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3318 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 3318 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just a comment, and it's for Representative Taylor, who I just have to say the woman did yeoman's work as a volunteer for 2 years, something like that. Who's counting at this point? And just really just busted it out, did not have to put that effort in as a volunteer to do all the work that we did with Representative Kinnamer and then Chair Tomei on this issue. And we've been at this since I got here. This is the fifth year of us doing this work, and Kathleen's been there for a couple years of that in a non-elected capacity. And I just want to thank her very publicly for the work, because she didn't have to do that and, you know, sort of put that auditor's eye on the problem and help us drill down. And I still think there's a lot of concepts that are out there around the lottery and problem gambling and gaming and all of the things that, you know, are disease-fueled with whether you lay a bet and try to, you know, hope that you're going to win your mortgage. that's a real problem, and she's done a lot of work. And I just, and Representative Kinnamer's been doing it since, you know, the last time he was elected. And so I just want to thank them because it's critical work. I mean, this affects, you heard, 80,000+ people in Oregon have gambling problems, and there's still a lot of unfinished concepts out there, whether she brings them or I bring them or Bill brings them, but we need to continue the work, and I just wanted to make sure she knew how much I appreciate all of her efforts.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. I echo those comments, having been on that task force with you all, too. So, and I'm delighted that we've got the spirit of former Chair Tomei here.
That's right.
Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Brett Buehling?
Yes.
Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Gallegos?
Aye.
Rep. Hayden?
Aye.
Rep. Harris?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Starr?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Puzo? Aye. Aye. The motion passes. Okay.
What are we on? We were being kind of
anxious.
We just came back for you.
Oh, we need a carrier. I'm sorry. Do I need to open it back up? I'm going to open the work session.
I was thinking maybe I would carry it.
I am Representative Taylor. Thank you for being willing to carry it. Close the work session.
Madam Chair, if we could pause for just a
moment. Okay, we're going to
perish. Representative Kenny
take a pause.
Somebody.
Bill 2233. So I'm going to open a work session on 2233. This is the one that Representative Nathanson addressed earlier. Can you summarize that one more time?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2233 directs Oregon Health Authority to continue payments for behavioral rehabilitation services during child welfare investigation, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a Dash 3 amendment pending. It replaces the bill. Directs Department of Human Services to create advisory committee for the purpose of advising DHS on matters relating to residential care for children as prescribed outlines. Advisory committee membership declares emergency effective on passage.
And so actually the Dash 3 is now adopted, no longer pending. Oh, no, we haven't done that
one. We didn't adopt it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you were eager to do that before, so.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-15-15.
Okay. Vice Chair Stark moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-15-15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted. The fiscal has come in. It's $351,000 for the biennium. And so that means it'll go on to Ways and Means. So, Representative Stark.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2233 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Stark moves that House Bill 2233 as amended go to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay, clerk, please call the roll.
Rep.
Yes.
Yes.
Rep.
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Parrish?
Aye.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pelosi?
Aye.
Rep. Geyer?
Aye. The motion passes. And I close the work session on 2233. 195 next, right?
Yep, let me double check.
2195. If we could pause for just one moment.
Okay. We'll
stand at ease.
Stand at ease.
Thanks. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2195 requires county use funds collected for delinquent taxing foreclosure to provide low-income housing, social services, and child care. There is a dash 3 amendment pending that applies the statute only to counties with populations of 650,000 or more, directs that funds be used for housing, rental assistance, and affordable housing development, and modifies the language for consistency. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, no subsequent referral.
As you may recall, this was in Multnomah County, only referred to Multnomah County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, may I have a motion? May I have a motion?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 4-9-15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated 4-9-15. Is there any discussion? Okay, if not, is there any objection? Okay, amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2195 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2195 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Rep.
Euler? Yes.
Rep. Evans?
Yep.
Rep. Gallego?
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
Yes.
Rep. Parrish?
Yes.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Rep. Euler?
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Peluso, will you be the carrier?
I would love to. Thank you.
Okay. With that, I close the work session on 2195. And next sheet. Okay. Opening a work session on 2547. Robin, can we have a summary of the bill? And Melissa Unger, can we invite you up, please?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2547 directs housing facilities providing support services to register with Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, outlines registration requirements and resident notification process. There is a dash 4 amendment that replaces the bill that directs the Department of Human Services to convene a task force to define housing with services, define consumer rights, set standards for licensure and registration, and define safety standards. Specifies task force membership, requires report to Legislative Assembly by December 31st, 2015, directs DHS to enact 6-month moratorium on new housing with services facilities, and outlines rights of residents.
Okay, Melissa. Please.
Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the chance to just quickly address the amendment. Since the last hearing, we have come together with all of the kind of opponents and proponents to work on this amendment. I just want to make two things clear about the current amendment. The Oregon Community for Housing Services is not currently on the task force, and we will want to change that in Ways and Means. We also are still trying to kind of figure out how we keep the size of the task force reasonable, but we will make sure that they are added to the official task force. And then also also there's a place for two representatives and two senators on the committee and on the task force, and the intent of that is to be bipartisan, but if people want, we can make that very clear in the next amendment in Ways and Means as well. So that was the original intent of the language. So I just wanted to make sure that people were clear on those two things, and that I feel like the conversations since the hearing have been productive, and we're moving in the right direction.
So everyone remembers this is housing with services. It's an exciting, growing area, but as it grows, we want to make sure that it's properly regulated. And so it's taking a kind of a deep dive into that, making sure that we are able to define what housing with services is and help it on its path forward.
Yeah. So questions?
Any questions?
No question.
Yes, Reverend Stark.
Thank you, Chair. Melissa, why have the moratorium on the funding between now and December? Because, you know, it was further, and you guys limited it down in the amendment, but why have that at all?
Chair Kinney-Geyer and Representative Stark, I think the conversation around the current project that's been in Portland has been that it's really a pilot project, and we really did work on the language to not make it a moratorium on any housing projects, but really just DHS funding to any projects like this, because that's the new piece of this that I think is different. So we really did try to refine it so it was about new money to new projects, since this was a pilot project, and the idea was that before we commit new money to new projects, that pilot project should be evaluated. So that was really the decision. We tried to make sure it was limited to when recommendations come out in only 6 months and didn't have any impact on housing moving forward, but really just any kind of commitment of funds at DHS until the pilot project has been evaluated and whatever recommendations come out of this task force are done. So that was really the reason and how we kind of limited it to make sure that it didn't make any problems for, I think, any kind of projects that were going forward.
We have been in communication with Mike Barnett from DHS, who can come up and answer questions if you want, but they are satisfied with this. It's not going to really slow anything down. It's just a pause. Not sure that there was really any funding on the table outside of the housing piece, and that will go forward. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything on this before we move ahead? Okay. Can I have a motion on the bill, please?
Is it my turn? Or is it?
Would you like to go ahead?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move to adopt the -4 amendment stated 4/16/15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the -4 amendment stated 4/16/15. Is there any discussion? Representative Stark.
I'm gonna be a no on the amendments, primarily to flag the bipartisan issue that she mentioned. I think more and more I keep seeing these task force, and maybe well intended to have the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House appoint two members, but it doesn't always spell out bipartisan, and it would be easy for someone to abuse the power, not saying that either currently would, but it would be easy for that to not be a bipartisan thing. So I'm a no, primarily just to kind of flag that moving forward to Ways and Means, and I hope that they do have the chance to amend that.
Okay.
I'm going to be a no for a different reason. I really feel comfortable that our current laws, without stifling innovation, are very well covered and serve folks in the housing side and in the healthcare side. If we need some level of a bridge, I don't know what that bridge is. I don't know that this task force is looking for a bridge. I think it's looking for like full-on regulatory of something I think is very innovative. So I'm just going to be a no for that purpose, because you heard testimony that there have been no complaints. This feels like a problem, solution looking for a problem. I know we don't want to necessarily be in a situation where we do nothing and maybe there are complaints that come forward, but right now I think, consumers have a really interesting choice here, but it is a choice. It's a choice that is currently governed under healthcare laws and under housing laws. So I'm going to be a no for that reason.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Clark, can you please call the roll?
Rev Dealer?
No.
Rev Evans?
Yes.
Rev Gallegos?
Yes.
Rev Hayden?
No.
Rep Parrish?
No.
Rep Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Kinney-Geyer?
Aye. The motion passes.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House.
Oh, that was the amendment.
The amendment. Sorry. Yep. Sorry.
Keep going.
Okay. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2547 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2547 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So, am I missing a fiscal impact statement on this? It's a task force.
Right.
It's. I'm seeing a revenue impact. Maybe I'm in the wrong bill. But
sure, yes. It's on. Oh, so we can. 2547. Double check. I'm sending it to you right now.
It is going on to Ways and Means.
I know, but I'm just not seeing a fiscal.
I thought it, she said maybe it was the one, but I don't know.
Revenue impact.
We'll double check and make sure.
There's no fiscal on the amendment.
No fiscal.
There's no fiscal on the amendment.
No, we're on the bill now, though.
Mm-hmm. I just sent it to Ty.
No, no, no fiscal has been produced on the amendment.
Well, are you on the amendment or the bill? I mean, they're just, it's task force. The last one was $150,000. I'm just not seeing a fiscal for this at all.
This will be moved into Ways and Means.
Just curious to know what it is.
We have a fiscal.
Do you know what it is?
She's, yeah.
She's looking up.
She's, no, she's uploading it right now. So I can.
About that one.
Do you have Representative Evans expended?
It's $52,864.
The follow-up?
Yep, follow-up.
So I'm curious then. We had the, you know, House Bill 2201 with a fiscal of 153, and this one's 50. I'm just curious what the disparity is. That's a pretty big swing between from one to the other. So is there any?
It probably is because this is very short-term. It's only okay. 6 months. That's my guess.
Okay. All right, thanks. So.
Okay. Yep. There is a narrative in the fiscal impact statement if you'd like to.
Not up yet, so.
It, okay, I'm showing it, Madam Chair.
Try to refresh.
Should be up there.
Refreshing.
No, I'm refreshing too.
By golly, yes, you are refreshing.
Thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Sorry, they're all coming at the last minute.
Oh, I know. It's just not showing on mine. And
do you want to read it?
Sure.
We'll read it out loud.
You know, does matter. There's a fiscal. I'm going to be no anyway, so yeah. Just send it on. We don't need to read it out loud.
Yeah, you are a no without the fiscal.
I can. Sorry.
Out there for just a moment. Madam Chair,
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, establishes task force. Madam Chair, members of the committee, establishes task force on housing with services. Here it is. DHS is required to provide staff support to the task force and reimburse 11 non-legislative members of the task force for travel and other expenses incurred in their performance of task force duties out of funds appropriated to DHS for the purposes of the task force. However, the bill does not appropriate additional funds to DHS, which would seem to suggest that expenses for reimbursement and staff support are intended to come from its legislatively approved budget, which does not contemplate expenditures specifically for this purpose. The bill allows the task force to meet and times and places specified by the call of the chair or a majority of the voting members. The fiscal impact of this bill depends on the scope of the work undertaken by the task force, as well as the number of meetings and geographic location of task force members. At minimum, DHS estimates the agency would need a potential 15,434 total funds to reimburse the task force members. And that is all. So my apologies for the
I'm still gonna be a no, but I guess I'm questioning if they're gonna just absorb it in their budget, what other programmatic expense from their budget is no longer going to be, like, what's gonna shift and to make that happen? Because it's very rare that a task force bill comes forward where someone says, I'm going to absorb $50,000 in my budget and just make that happen. So I'm just curious how DHS thinks they're going to absorb that.
We could have him come up again if you want. I think it was said it would come out of a legislative budget. Mm-hmm. So the legislature also has a budget for task forces. But again, I think the policy question is, do we think as a Human Services Committee, this is a policy that should go forward? Ways and Means has to look at both the money involved in task forces, but also how many task forces there are. So DHS gets a certain amount, OHA gets a certain amount. They want to make sure they're not overloaded. So that's one of the reasons that Ways and Means sees all the task forces get weighed down there.
Madam Chair, if I might make a clarification, it's indicated from the Legislative Fiscal Office that they make the assumption that the funds will just come out of the general DHS budget. It's not mm-hmm. a specific line item. So okay. Just to be clear,
okay. Which means staffing, and the actual reimbursement for expenses, the $15,000 comes out of the legislative budget.
The legislatively approved budget.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion on the bill? Clerk, could you please call the roll?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes. Close a work session on 2547. Open a work session on 2756.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2756 directs Department of Human Services to adopt rules to define practical knowledge and skills required for caregivers in licensed residential facilities and adult foster care homes. There is a -2 amendment that replaces the bill, directs DHS to convene task force to study training of direct care staff supporting individuals with developmental disabilities, outlines task force membership, topics for consideration and outcomes, requires report to legislature no later than December 1st, 2015, sunsets task force on or before December 31st, 2015, declares emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact. Fiscal impact statement has been issued, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and I will double check right now to make sure that the fiscal is on OLIS.
No, 2756.
Fiscal impact statement, Madam Chair, I'm showing is on OLIS.
That's so weird. It's not showing up on mine.
On the internal, the staff one, when you log in?
No, on the external.
Madam Chair, Representative Pusa, I can email it to you right now.
That'd be great. Okay. Thanks. Actually do that from, so I use all the external stuff.
Madam okay, Chair, I can summarize it. Madam Chair, Taishika made the impact statement public just so everyone could view it right now. So Madam Chair, members of the committee, from the fiscal impact statement, again, DHS is required to provide staff support to the task force and reimburse the 11 non-legislative members of this task force for travel and other expenses incurred in the performance of their task force duties out of funds appropriated to DHS for the purpose of the task force. However, the bill does not appropriate additional funds to DHS, which would seem to suggest expenses for reimbursement and staff support are intended to come from its legislatively approved budget, which does not contemplate expenditures specifically for this purpose. The bill allows the task force to meet in times and places specified, called by the chair or a majority of the voting members. The fiscal impact of this bill on DHS is indeterminate, depending on the scope of work undertaken by the task force
as well as the number of meetings and geographic location of task force members. DHS estimates the agency would need a potential $52,864 total funds to reimburse task force members.
Okay, we have a motion.
Me?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead? Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4/10/15.
Vice Chair Peluso moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4/10/15. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, if not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2756 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Peluso moves House Bill 2756 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay, clerk, please call the roll.
Rep. Mueller?
No.
Rep. Evans?
Yes.
Rep. Agu?
Yes.
Rep. Hayden?
No.
Rep. Parrish?
No.
Rep. Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Kingar?
Aye. The motion passes. Close the work session on 2756. Open a work session on 3391. Robin, please read the bill.
Madam Chair, with your indulgence, may I check to make sure that the fiscal has been issued? This was one that we were waiting.
Oh, okay.
My apologies.
This one does not come back with a big miss. What
did you just open?
Madam Chair, we still do not have a fiscal impact statement for House Bill 3391.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on 3391 and carry it over to Monday. I think that's it. Again, we're carrying.
Then you just need to make an announcement that we're going to.
Okay, so we're carrying over House Bill 2201, 3535, 3420, and 3391. That was the last one we just did.
Madam Chair.
Any others? Yep.
3391 is being carried over?
Being carried over just because we don't have the fiscal.
Okay. That doesn't mean there's a problem or anything.
No, it just means we don't have the fiscal to...
Wanted to ask.
Right,
thank
right,
you.
Right. That's your bill, I know. That's your bill.
Wanted to know.
We will make sure the fiscal happens. Is there any else other than I'm missing that we need to carry over?
Needs to be
four. We have four that we're carrying over.
Madam Chair, if I might suggest, may we pause momentarily?
We're going to pause and make sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Reopen the House Committee on Human Services and Housing for the purpose of carrying over to Monday, April 20th, the work sessions on House Bill 3535, 3391, 2201, and the new one I'm stating is 3524. I mistakenly said 3420 earlier. It's really 3524. So are there any other questions?
A comment?
Yes, please.
I would want to thank our one last person
non-staffer.
Here.
Non-staffer.
On a Friday.
Hanging in there.
He's going to the beach. Well. So he
We are carrying. Yeah. I'm sorry. We are carrying over 3420. That was not a mistake earlier. So we've got five that we're carrying over in addition to all of the bills that we already have scheduled. So please come on time. We're going to try to get out of here by five, but I hope you are holding to until 6 in case needed. And with that, I adjourn the House Committee on Human Services and Housing.
Why am I passing a note when committee's out?
Ashley Bell.
I know.
And housing.
Why am I passing a note when committee's out?